All right, let's get to it here. Always working right through the breaks trying to get things organized. It has been so hot here, and I know I'm not alone. Most of you people living out west in the southwest, and even in the, up to the northwest in this area, it has been in the high 90s, low 100s for weeks, it seems like. And it gets to be very taxing. It's tiring. It's fatiguing. That's the word. I mean, I'm sometimes just kind of delirious from the heat. It's not good. It's not a good environment. Okay. Let's go back to headlines which I mentioned earlier. There's a very excellent article that I'll send over to Henry. University of California, San Francisco. It's entitled, "We Thought It Was Just a Respiratory Virus." And it discloses and unleashes all the data that they've found. It's quite remarkable. They were obviously shocked, those who were investigating this. And I want to repeat again, this one study, now granted it's one study, 100 people, 78% of whom recovered from coronavirus but showed signs of heart damage. This is not a good, it's not a good thing. I just look at the list of symptoms, which is now close to 100. And these symptoms, I think, in many cases, are going to be extended to post-recovery. They're just going to carry them right on out. Some COVID survivors are said to be losing their ability to walk and are having to relearn basic motor skills. That's a story I'm running a second time because I think it's that important. Representative Louis Gohmert says he's going to use zinc, erythromycin, not zithromycin, and hydroxy to fight his COVID infection. We will see. Meanwhile, I think most of you know by now that former GOP presidential contender Herman Cain did die of coronavirus, but he had underlying health conditions. He had been a cancer survivor for several years, very sick. So there's a complicating factor right there. There's a lot going on, and I just don't know even how most Americans are able to synthesize any of it when you have 20 million Americans who are facing eviction in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Where are they going to go? Who's going to take care of them? Many of them are going to end up, they're going to end up right on the streets. That's not good. Walmart and other major retailers are going a little soft on the mask-wearing mandate that they had been trying to push in the stores. There have been a lot of abuse from anti-mask customers, apparently. So they're lax in their standards now. What else do we have here? Why some people who haven't had coronavirus officially might already have some measure of herd immunity. The story says about 37% of people who have not had it are showing T cells, which should only be there if they have some kind of immunity to this particular organism. We got a whole lot of stories here. Let me just leave it at that. Bring on Henry Nyman and let's just jump into it. Hello, Henry. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. Good to be back. A lot of activity again today. The numbers are continuing to climb as far as the deaths are concerned. They're pretty similar to what they were yesterday. So it's moved up to 1,400 a day now. And at least two of the states that were set records yesterday broke that record today. One of them was Florida, got up to 217 cases yesterday and 217 deaths yesterday.
Yeah,
and and it went to 252 today. And then Texas had 313 deaths yesterday, and they went up to 322 today. California was a little bit lower today. They're 98 as of 7 o'clock local time, so they may go up a little bit. But they had almost 200 yesterday. But in spite of that decline there, it was made up somewhat by Arizona. They set a record. They had 172 deaths today. And there were a bunch of other states that had, relatively high numbers on death. South Carolina had 52 and Mississippi had 48. And Louisiana had 42 and Illinois had 36. And so the total was around 1,400 again today. It was a little slightly higher than that yesterday. It was about 1,460. Right. But California might add a few more. I'm not sure why they're as low as they are today relative yesterday. But the numbers are going up. Trump did do another update, and I don't know. The update wasn't scheduled. I think he gave it because Obama gave a eulogy, so he saw Obama on TV and figured that
screen time. Got to get his screen time.
So he went and hastily scheduled an update. There wasn't much news, so he kind of cherry picked the data and was essentially saying how much better things were getting and how bad things were.
Things are getting rosier every day. Yeah,
right. And they're getting bad in other countries. He gave Australia. Getting bad was percent increases, and whenever they start using percents, you kind of wonder why. And the reason why is because he's taking countries that had virtually no cases, and now they're starting to get some cases that they're trying to tamp down. So they're going from some very, very low number to some other number that's actually also pretty low, but percentage wise, it's a big jump over virtually no cases. So he used, I think he mentioned Australia, he mentioned Israel. Israel actually did have a spike up, and they gave them as an example. And then said how well things were going in the U.S. And again, this is cherry picking, that he's kind of shifting gears.
Correct.
If you recall, a few days ago, maybe it was even a week ago, he was citing the low number of deaths in the U.S. because, as I said, it was kind of between waves, that essentially the initial series of outbreaks in the Northeast had pretty much got things under control, and the numbers had declined. The deaths are a trailing indicator. So the deaths had finally gotten down to a low number, and they were holding that. Whereas the ones that were exploding in the South and the West, it was a little bit too early for those patients to die. So that those patients had filled up the ICUs, but they hadn't started to die in high numbers.
And so the number
was down. So we were as low, especially if you count weekends, as low as 200 deaths in a day. And so he cited that and says, he lowered the death rate down to 87%. He lowered it. But he said that today, and they're not at 200 anymore. They're at 1,400. So, if you want to use his percentage, the deaths are seven times higher today than they were two or three weeks ago. And so he ignored the current deaths and focused on the old data for the deaths. And then for cases, the states that that are seeing the deaths skyrocket right now have leveled off a little bit on the total number of cases. So he said that things are under control there. So he says that Florida and Texas are now getting under control because they're flattening. But in reality, the deaths are going through the roof and moving this total up to 1,400 this week. And next week, they'll probably be close to 2,000 a day. So they'll mm-hmm. be back into yeah. the 2,000 a day
yeah.
range.
Yeah.
And the number of cases where it's leveling off at 65,000 new cases a day. It was 64,500 today, and it was 66,800 yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's leveling off at an all-time high level. I mean, the most in the day got up to about 75,000. This is yeah. over 65,000. And that's not where you want to level off. I mean, before we were leveled off at 20,000. And then all right. of a sudden, things took off, and it went up to 65,000, 75,000, and now it's a little bit flattened at 65,000. But you know, we're number one in the world as far as how many new cases we have every day, and we're number one in the world in total number of cases, which is getting close to 4.5 million. It just hit 4 million. About a week ago or so, and it'll be up to 5 million in another week because it's right. going up 65,000 cases a day.
No,
right.
No. Remember what I said about Trump? He's a Shakespearean tragic comic character in way over his head now.
Yeah.
He just, it's...
Yeah.
it's
and unfortunately, he's in charge of the pandemic, although he's not really in charge.
He's no, just he's not. No.
Cherry-picking
he steps
and
in
holding
comments,
these...
drops a few
right,
comments,
right.
and then steps and, back. He's not leading anything.
Right, and there's nothing there. I mean, there were no scientists with him today. There was, you know, he gave the whole thing. And
yeah.
he did it on very short notice. And, you know, he just gave misinformation. I mean, he went back to the, you know, schools, time for the schools to open up and the children, you know, have a very low rate. Mm-hmm. They're immune to it is what he said. He's using terminology that he doesn't understand is inaccurate.
This is like pulling wings off a fly with this guy. It's just pathetic.
Right. And he's merging them. I mean, there were early studies that basically said children 10 and under didn't have as much virus because they had lower H2 receptors, and therefore
what?
They weren't as contagious as spreading it. But the problem with those studies is that they were done on the earlier cases, and the earlier cases had the original strain.
Pre-Italian.
They didn't have right. So now the Italian strain is there, and it's emerged since the lockdown. And during the lockdown, there wasn't any school, and then there was the summer, and there wasn't any school. So the children really haven't had that much exposure or had any that many studies done because they haven't been in school. And so they've been mm-hmm. somewhat isolated, and so they don't present themselves. You know, researchers basically mm-hmm. go to schools and get a whole mm-hmm. bunch of students and see what's going on there. If they're all scattered around at home and learning at a distance, they're not being studied. So they're basing the rates on what things were like with the other virus at the very beginning of the outbreak. And
right.
as the outbreak goes along, you get to higher levels of the virus, even if it doesn't change, because that's the version, those are the people that pass it along. So if some people have a higher viral load, they go and they infect other people that start with a higher viral load. And it is these people with the higher loads that are doing most of the spreading, and the virus is able to get a stronger foothold before it gets under control, because it starts out at a higher level. So it's taken very early data. And one study just came out that said they looked at the viral levels in the nose of 10-year-olds, I think.
Yes, and their noses. That's right.
Yeah, and they had as much as the adults had.
Adults.
So they can pass it along, especially if they're looking right now. So the idea that the children don't have much virus and they're immune is just nonsense. They don't tend to go in the hospital, but the young adults don't tend to go in the hospital as high a frequency as when they get a little bit older, or if they're a lot older. I mean, the ones that are more likely to end up in the hospital and end up dying are their parents, or more likely their grandparents. And so he's trying to indicate that the schools are safe and it's not a problem. And it's going to be a problem. And I gave the boots on the ground, how the school was starting to have a spike in the cases. Well, here in Pittsburgh, there's this one area called Penn Hills. They've got the highest concentration in Allegheny County. I think they've had like 250 cases now. And they've already called off the in-school option. I mean, mostly they're giving the parents an option. They can do it, go in school for classes, or they can, sign up and do it virtually. And they've already pulled the in-school option. So there's no in-school for the whole first half of the year now. There's at least two school districts in this area called Penn Hills. And so they've already called it. So they're not even going to start. But I heard the details of Florida. And Florida, it's mandatory that all the schools have to offer classes, in-person classes.
But it's still voluntary for the parents.
Well, what they're doing is they're given the option. And so they basically had three different options. One is that you're in school. The other is that it's virtual, but it's with your teachers. So it's the teachers from the school that you normally do go to would be the ones that would be doing it, holding the classes remotely. And the third option would be remote, but not necessarily your teacher. They would have teachers that normally give classes to a much larger audience, and they let them sign up. And the percentages they had was 28% were signing up for in school, 62% were signing up for virtual but with their teachers, and 10% were just doing virtual with others. But the caveat is that at the beginning of the year, everybody is starting out virtually so that they kind of get used to it. And so the first 10 days, there's no in school. Everybody is virtual, so they'll know how the virtual works and they'll be ready. So if they go in school and they have to switch, they'll have already been exposed to that and it'll be a smoother transition. So they know full well that there's no way that they're going to have these in schools going on for any length of time. And I think a couple schools in the South have already started now. And, a few more will start trickling in. But the problem is that as more and more schools, even if it's only 20-30% of the population, they're going to get infected, and they're going to take the virus home, and they're going to infect their parents and their grandparents, and they're going to just start another spike. It's going to be very similar to what happened in 2009 with the swine flu. that as soon as school started in the fall, then the cases started to take off.
And well, here's a headline for you that'll bring it home. L.A. County announces that coronavirus has ripped through USC. Students and faculty hit hard, allegedly. Fraternity Row, all of it. So it's not slowing down, folks. It's not plateauing.
No. No, I mean, the whole issue, I mean, that was another thing that Trump had brought up. He said, well, some of these states, it looked like they had it out of control, and now they're having a resurgence. And that's and that's what was expected. The idea was to knock it down to a manageable level where you could do contact tracing. And then when new cases started showing up, you would be able to identify who the contacts were, get them quarantined, and stop the spread. But they don't have enough test kits. And so they can't really do the contact tracing. So that even though the plan was to get it to a manageable level, there are so many cases and such a backlog that they can't use the national labs because they've got, you know, a 5 to 7 day delay in getting results. And you can't do contact tracing if you don't know who's positive for 5 to 7 days after you sent the sample off, because you only are going to call the contacts of the ones that you know have the virus. You don't want to call the contacts of people that you took a sample from, but you don't know whether they're positive or not, because a fairly high percentage of those tested do test negative. You know, if you're in double digits, that means you're in trouble. But double digits is 10, 12, 15%. That means 85% tested negative. So you don't want to call the contacts of the 85% that are negative and saying you got to quarantine, because you're a contact of somebody we're testing. You're only going to tell them you got a quarantine because you're a contact of someone who tested positive. So because they don't have the test, they can't really do the contact tracing, and that the cases are going to go up when you start lifting the restrictions. And it's just, you know, there's no real central control. There's no leadership.
Nothing.
No. And they're constantly rationing things. That, you know, you're supposed to wear a mask, but they don't really have enough N95 masks. You're supposed to do contact tracing, but they don't have the test kits.
No, I would
And they're worried they're going to run out of PPEs when things get going.
I know.
Okay, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
All right. Masks. I've been wearing an N95 from the beginning. That's all I have. I forgot one, and I went to the post office today. They won't let you in there. It's a substation. It's in a big store. And I went in, and I asked the clerk, I said, I forgot my mask. Can I buy one? She said, well, no, let me see if I can get you one free. We've got some here behind the counter. So she found one and she gave it to me. It was not an N95. It was just one of those over the ear, the kind that you pull up on the top and the bottom and spread it out. It's a surgical mask. And I kid you not, I started laughing. There's no protection in that mask compared to an N95, which fits snugly around your face. The air was flowing in from the top, on each side of my nose, under my chin, on each cheek. The air was just coming and going. So I'm sure it does some good, but it ain't much. Better than nothing.
Right. They estimated it was 70% instead of 95% was kind of the number. You know,
exactly. I think that's generous.
What it is, I don't know. It probably is. You know, like you said, it's better than nothing. And
it's
certainly not 95%. But that's what's generally available.
Correct.
That's what the problem is.
It's not
that everybody can get an N95. And that is generally what they'll do. I mean, they don't want to make it, you know, they just want you to put on a mask. If you forget your mask, you know, that's what the police were doing when, you know, they would stop somebody that didn't have a mask. They wouldn't give them a ticket. They'd give them a mask and tell them to put it on, and they would put it on and say thank you. And so it's not that big of a burden, you know, to do that. And it does help, you know, in both directions. It helps more in preventing you from infecting somebody than from you getting infected, because if you cough or, you know, if there's droplets.
I completely concur, and you're right.
The paper mask will limit. It won't eliminate, but it'll limit it. And there are more studies that are showing that in countries that have the mask, they seem to be able to control things better. And that's why I was saying that, you know, comparisons of how things are going in the U.S. or with others, like, you know, well, Sweden didn't really, you know, shut everything down and it didn't get that bad. But that doesn't mean that they weren't wearing masks, and it doesn't mean that people weren't paying attention, that fewer people were going out to
they were all encouraged to wear masks. Masks were made available for them.
Right,
they were also told to exercise common sense, keep a little distance. Yeah, that's what they did.
Right. And that's why I say people had common sense, and they believed that the virus was a problem. I mean, here it just got politicized.
Totally.
And so, you know, that you're not supposed to wear a mask because you don't really need it. It's all, you know, overblown. It's a hoax. I mean, today on the internet, they're saying, well, that Herman Cain didn't die from COVID, you know, that he had underlying conditions. And, you know, they just said he died from COVID because he happened to have COVID, but that's not why he died. And I mean, you could just look at the timing of it. He went in the hospital. I mean, he had symptoms 9 days after the rally in Tulsa. They had plenty of pictures showing that nobody was wearing masks at the rally. They were all sitting together. They were all posing for the pictures. There was no distancing. There was no mask. And the numbers have skyrocketed in Oklahoma since then. And you know, I said there's always a little bit of a delay. So the numbers were already going up when they had the rally, and then the confirmation came. I mean, Oklahoma does 1,000 new cases a day now. And once you get up to 1,000 cases, you're at a level where, you know, the deaths going to 20, 30, 40, 50 a day are not that far behind. And so
here's an actor. I got that. Let me do this. Here's an actor, Bryan Cranston. Bryan Cranston. He put this note, I guess, up on one of these social media things. He said, "Hi, about now you're probably feeling a little tied down, restricting your mobility. And like me, you're tired of all this. Well, I just want to encourage you to have a little more patience. I was pretty strict in adhering to the protocols, and still I contracted the virus. Yep, it sounds daunting now that over 150,000 Americans are dead because of it. I was one of the lucky ones. Mild symptoms. I count my blessings and urge you to keep wearing the damn mask. Keep washing your hands and stay socially distant. We can prevail, but only if we follow the rules together." So that's his word. So he's makes good points.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, now that you mentioned mild, I just want to repeat this issue of mild and hydroxychloroquine. Most patients that have mild disease are going to recover. You know, they're, if you look hard enough, you may have evidence of problems. But, you know, externally, they're going to have symptoms. and the symptoms are going to go away. They're not going to end up in the hospital. They're not going to have, any debilitating disease that, is apparent from the outside. If you x-ray their lungs, you might be able to see some damage. Or if you, look at their heart, you might be able to find some damage. But in general, they're going to tell you, it wasn't that big a deal. It was like the flu. I was tired and I had a cough and maybe I had a fever and the fever went away and the cough went away. And I feel fine, a little tired or something, but it wasn't that bad. And that's going to happen no matter what you do. So if you go and you have mild case and you take hydroxychloroquine, you're going to get better. But if you have a mild case and, jump up in the air and click your heels, you're going to get better. There's no cause and effect there on mild cases. That's what Stella, advertises. They advertise, come in with mild cases and we'll treat you. So they're actually selecting mild cases. Mm-hmm. They give them this cocktail of hydroxychloroquine,
zithromycin,
and zinc, and the patients get better. But that's why I said you can't really tell anything from anecdotal, which is, I had 100 patients that came in and did X, Y, and Z, and they got better. And that's what you're going to get, especially if they're younger patients, and especially if they come in early, you're going to get these milder cases that in many instances would never even go to a doctor. They're going to the doctor because you're advertising. You can treat it. Come in when it's early. That's when the treatment works the best. And they get, this group of people that have mild disease, and normally they wouldn't even see a doctor. And in fact, I don't even know if they're all tested. They come in and they basically say, well, here, take this, take these pills and you'll be fine. And, if you have symptoms, you probably have it. And don't worry about it because these work like a charm. And the only way you can really tell that it's working like a charm, if the vast majority of people with very mild disease recover, is you have to do a very large number of patients because that are controlled and they have to be blinded. So you don't, view the data on who goes into who gets it and who doesn't, who gets the placebo, and then prove that there's an effect. And these small studies, or the ones that say, I've had 350 patients and none have died, none of your patients actually even went to the hospital. They came in when they were very early, and some of them probably didn't even have COVID. And you gave them their drug and they got better. And you said it's because you gave them the drug, but you could do anything and they would get better. So whenever you see these advertisements, and that's what they would tell Trump, where they'd say, oh, they did this study and it didn't improve the mortality and they end up dying, but they were given to, patients that were getting ready to go on ventilators or they were already on ventilators, and you have to take the early patients. Well, if you take the early patients, most of the early patients are not necessarily early and they're getting ready to get a lot worse. They're early patients and they're not going to get very sick. And they're not normally even going to go in the hospital. And the ones that don't go in the hospital and they have mild disease, they recover no matter what. I mean, 80% of the people recover. And if you take younger patients, it's even a higher percentage. You know, the ones that go in the hospital and don't do well are generally older. The younger ones can go in the hospital and still have problems, but they don't end up dying. And so the mortality rate is much higher in the older patients, and the younger ones get discharged, but, you know, whether they actually have damage, they're not going to know until they look somewhat closer and see, you know, the study that you mentioned with 100 patients, when they looked at the markers, the one for a heart attack and one for inflammation, you know, they basically had elevated levels, but they weren't dramatically elevated. I mean, some of them were. Some had fairly high numbers, and others had kind of this borderline number. But if they drew the line like at 3, then generally that was higher than the controls they did. Some of the controls could get up to 3, but most of the controls were undetectable or mm-hmm. or below, you know, somewhere below 3. And so you had it, but you had to look closely. It was fairly sensitive, and they were dramatically different. If you looked at the whole population, you saw that all of the ones that had COVID had at least 3, but a lot of them were just 3. And the ones that didn't have SR would creep up to 3, and there'd uh-huh. be a little bit of an overlap there. But if you looked at the whole population, they were dramatically different, and they had a very low, you know, the probability that it was by chance was 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000. I don't know. There were a number of zeros in front of the one. I don't know if it was 2, 3, or 4, but it was very low. So the point is that there's still the possibility of these patients having some type of problem, but the milder cases in general, you know, superficially, they seem to have recovered. They didn't have to go to the hospital. They didn't die. And they recovered regardless of whether you gave them hydroxychloroquine or whether you... Right. jumped up right. in the air.
Well, I'm still watching very closely. We need time. These studies of people who have recovered and who still report symptoms, some kind of symptomatic, they think, is a residual from being infected with the virus. I'm watching that really closely. Now, this is a real key part to the whole thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's all about that polybasic sleepy site. So
that's
you have
right.
the virus. They can go to all these different cell types, and they're presenting with these various symptoms because it really depends upon, you know, where the virus ended up going. So if it ends up, you know, causing clotting problems that are in your brain, then you might have trouble walking type of a thing until that ends up clearing up. And it might not clear up very quickly because there's additional damage from your immune system. And that happens in the children. And, you know, they had examples of, you know, they show pictures of the kids. They have rashes all over. That's all from the reaction to the virus. And, you know, they got fairly sick, but they didn't die. They recovered. They got out of the hospital. But, you know, it's still unclear what kind of damage that illness had. And it's not clear, you know, how many had something similar, but they didn't get present with a large enough rash or as dramatic as symptoms, and therefore mm-hmm. they never did see the doctor. So you generally
That's
have
right.
a whole spectrum of diseases, and you only hear about the tip of the iceberg, the ones that were, you know, very ill, and they, you know, just represent a small percentage of the total. But to say that that's the only ones that were affected is crazy because, you know, you are going to get a whole spectrum. And there weren't that many kids that were infected initially. And plus, the other thing for the ones with the rash and developed that syndrome, they were all in countries that had the Italian strain. So they weren't, they didn't see it in China because China had the original strain. And they didn't see it until, you know, they started seeing it in Europe, then they started seeing it in New York, and then they started seeing it in the cities with the bigger outbreak. They saw it here in Pennsylvania. It was mostly the ones in the eastern Pennsylvania that had it, and that was where they had the larger outbreaks in Philadelphia and suburban Philadelphia. And so, again, that was a result of the immune system reacting to the virus. And if you had the Italian strain, you had more virus. You had more virus going to these various locations in the body. And then the immune system got rid of the virus, but they caused, you know, collateral damage. And a lot of this damage didn't show up until several weeks after they had, you know, pretty much recovered from the virus, but they didn't recover from the immune system attacking the virus. And so the early studies aren't that applicable to what's happening with the Italian strain, because the Italian strain is presenting a disease that has more virus. And even if they don't see it in the fatality rate, that you might see it in these childhood illnesses because of the immune system. So the immune system has to work harder to get rid of more virus, and it might be successful enough so that if your endpoint is death, there's not as dramatic a difference. But if your endpoint is, you know, whether you have an elevated level of a heart enzyme, that it might very well be there. Or if you are a child and developed a rash, you're only going to see it in the ones that had the Italian strain that had a higher level of the virus. So that's kind of where things are. The numbers are continuing to go up. The U.S. is at this very high level, and it's almost sure to go up as more schools start to open up and they start to, you know, hand the masks out to the students and talk about social distancing. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to work, you know, because you're going to put all these kids together and they're just going to start passing the virus around, even with the mask. You know, as you said, they probably just have the surgical mask. They don't have N95. The ones that are in elementary school, you know, have trouble convincing them to wear the masks all day. And you're going to, once you're in school, they're going to want to do things after school, and they're going to, you know, get together where they hadn't been getting together before, because they think, well, they're in school all day. You know, they should be able to interact more after school. And you're just going to open things up to, you know, let the virus transfer. And you're going to get these new outbreaks. And then, you know, as you mentioned, flu season is coming up, and once that happens, it's going to be very confusing because you're going to have more people with symptoms.
Total chaos.
You're going to have COVID going. You're going to have influenza going.
Normal colds.
You're going to have a demand for more testing, and then the labs are already backed up from COVID, so then they have all these other upper respiratory diseases plus influenza, and everybody's going to think they've got COVID, and they're going to insist, you know, they need to be tested. They've got a fever, they've got a cough, they've got the same symptoms, and you're not going to know who's got what.
It's going to be an absolute mess. Yep.
And
I know this is bad.
And you're not going to get any results for any of it. Yeah, you're just going to be totally backed up, and they're going to run out of not only the machines to do the testing, but they're going to run out of the reagents to do the testing.
They're already short. Look, this is going to be just absolute chaos right on through the end of the year. It's just going to continue to escalate and cascade and avalanche. The avalanche will grow and grow. I don't see any way around it. There is none.
Yeah, it's going to be particularly bad here because there's such a high level, and it never really got under control. And it's not like you're at a level you're looking for something new to come up. Here, it's going to be already blended in, and you're already going to have these backlogs. And so you can't really monitor it adequately because you can't get results quick enough. And, there's going to be, some test kits that you can do. You can spit in a tube like you do for these DNA tests and do that. I mean, there will be that type of test.
Oh, there will be.
I don't know when it's going to roll out.
No, there's not going to. Right. No resolution. I got a question from a listener. Now, this is not to say China would or did. It's a hypothetical question. Please ask Dr. Sure. Nyman what would happen. This is in relation to the seed packets, Henry, that are showing up all over the country, the mystery seeds, which are just normal seeds. They wheat, barley, oat, whatever. There's nothing pathological about them. It does indicate that we are rather wide open. The question is, ask Dr. Nyman, please, what would happen if the Chinese decided to send millions of virus-infected packages to the U.S., under some other guise, whatever. In other words, the postal system is wide open for that kind of chicanery if they wanted to do it. I'm not saying they do or will or would.
Right.
But it's quite clear that there's a porous border through the U.S. postal system.
Yeah. Well, the virus can transmit that way, but it's not that efficient that most people actually end up getting infected by another person. And
correct.
So you can have the virus on surfaces or the seed. I'm still not exactly sure how the virus is going to go from the seed to the person.
Seeds, Henry. I think it was just a probe to see what would happen if they did something like that, to see how vigilant our security services are, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, people had concerns about not just seeds. People had concerns about packages and just, if they got something that was made in China.
One woman in Ohio got a single mask from China.
Yeah. Well, the issue right now is that, again, there's a lot more virus here than there is in China or in any seed packages. I mean, that's the type of thing that could happen, very, very, very early on, and it still wouldn't be that efficient. If you cough, there's a whole lot more virus that's going to go into the air than if you put something in a package and you ship it and it arrives days later.
Oh, I completely agree. But the point is, it is a porous entry point. I think that's it, strategically speaking. Whatever they're going to send.
But so are your state borders.
So are airlines. But it's just one more example.
Not even airlines. Somebody driving up from Florida. I mean, you would have a greater risk of going to a rest stop that they went to and getting affected than getting a package that was mailed from China. Okay, you had another question?
No, that's it. We're out of time anyway. Final comment. Go ahead.
Well, the comment is pretty much that things are kind of heading downhill, and that these states that have the high levels now that are flattening out are going to be followed by the states that have modest levels but are going up dramatically, and they'll be replacing them. So this level is going to stay up. You know, right now it's 60,000 cases a day and 1,400 deaths a day. Right. And the deaths are going to go back to the 2000, and that's before we get into the fall. So it's going to be a tough August, and you're going to see all these schools abandoning their in-class teaching. Everything's going to be virtual within like a month of trying it out in the school, is my prediction.
Very good. Okay. Thank you, Henry. Talk to you soon. Stay well.
Okay.
As they say.
Talk to you tomorrow. Take care.
Okay. All right. We'll be back. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, we'll be at you know where. So do stop by. And if you see something you like, spread it around. Share the knowledge. Talk to you soon. Take care.